Earlier this summer, we brought you the initial findings of the 2020 American Mosque Survey, courtesy of the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. The second report from this comprehensive survey is now out, and I am happy to welcome primary investigator Ison Bagby back to State of Belief Radio with the details. Ison, welcome back to the show.
Reverend Gaddy, it's always good to be with you.
What's the focus of this second set of findings?
The focus is on mosque activities in particular. There is a very deep concern about issues of women in the mosque, but that also encompasses part of it, and also kind of attitudes of mosque leaders. Attitudes in regards to how they understand Islam, what we call Islamic approach, but also attitudes in terms of how they view involvement in America and how they view America in general. So those are the main aspects of the second report.
This gets into some of the mechanics of Islamic law decision-making. It's a topic that's rife with misunderstanding and malicious manipulation in public awareness, I'm sorry to say. What can people not versed in these topics learn from the findings of your work?
Well, the main headline in this regard is that the majority, 55%, of mosque leaders, and therefore the assumption that mosques themselves, take an Islamic, a moderate, if you will, Islamic approach, a flexible Islamic approach, a contextual approach, in the sense that they hold to the firm belief in the foundational text of Islam, the Quran. From the Muslim point of view, the revelation of from God to Muhammad, which is the holy book of Islam, and also the recorded sayings of Muhammad, that these two foundational texts are upheld by all the mosque leaders. But how do you interpret those texts? And the majority look upon these texts with an eye to modern circumstances, an eye to looking at the spirit of the law, the spirit of the text, as opposed to the letter, or not as opposed, but in addition to the letter of the text. So it is, from the Muslim point of view, this is a moderate approach. 45% basically have different ways of interpreting, but they look to the past. They look to great scholars, the legal schools of the past. And so it is a more, you know, traditional, from the Muslim point of view, a little bit more conservative view of the text. So, and this, the percentage of those who do look upon the text in a more flexible light, that percentage is increasing. Since 2000, it is steadily increasing.
So, in fact, does any part of Islamic law or Islamic beliefs conflict with participation in public life in a pluralistic democracy like ours?
Oh, not at all. In fact, even the conservative ones voice very loudly, clearly, with total consensus that Muslims should be involved in American society for the betterment of American society. And the reality is that is the opinion of Islamic law from classical times, from 1,000 years ago. The great scholars of Islam 1,000 years ago took the opinion, which was the consensus, that when Muslims are in other lands, they should be good contributors. They should be people who are bring benefit to the society that they live in. So that's not even a issue among Muslims. Mm-hmm. Basically, everybody agrees with that.
Yeah.
No mosque in our sample that we interviewed would hold the opinion that they want Sharia to take over American society, American law, that they want to impose Sharia. That is not the opinion of mosque leaders in America.
Is it fair to say that the majority of American Islamic leaders approach Muslim engagement in public life?
Yes. In fact, ever since we started, and when we started in 2000, I was actually surprised at the results. But since 2000, so even before 9/11, the vast majority of mosque leaders believe that Muslims should be involved in American society. And now that percentage, by the way, is up to 98% of mosque leaders believe that Muslims should be involved in civic institutions in America. 95% agree that Muslims should be involved in the political process in America. So there is no debate within the American Muslim community, within the mosque community, that Muslims need to be good contributors to American society, need to be involved in American society.
And involved in politics.
And involved in politics.
Yeah.
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 A vast majority of American mosques engage in interfaith activities. Right. I obviously view that as a very positive thing indeed. What kinds of engagement did you find, and with whom are they primarily engaging?
Well, we asked about interfaith activities in three different respects. One, involved in interfaith educational type activities. Secondly, involvement in interfaith community service type activities. And then thirdly, in worship activities. So over three-fourths of mosques are involved in interfaith educational type activities, dialogues and so forth. And over half, 59%, so about 60%, are involved in interfaith community service. Mm-hmm. A much lower percentage are involved in worship services, I think about 40%. Mm-hmm. Still a solid percent of people. So, I mean, there's one thing, and you probably know this from your own experience, that Muslims are willing interfaith partners. And the hope is that this interfaith dialoguing between Christian Jews and Muslims and others will continue to grow, because that's how we overcome prejudice, by getting to know one another. Mm-hmm. And that's the best predictor of a non-presidential discriminatory attitude towards the other, is when they know the other. When they get to know the other, they, you know, do not hold to the stereotypical presidential attitudes towards people.
I noticed the terminology "women-friendly mosques." Does that? And then I read some about that. One is: does that mean perhaps there are some that are not friendly with about women? And do the Muslim women want more engagement in the mosques than they're getting now?
Yeah. Well, you must remember, Reverend Gaddy, is that during the long centuries of Islam, and we're talking about a faith that started, well, let's say that Muhammad, of course, is the prophet of Islam. He lived well over 1,400 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in that long period, there developed the idea that became a consensus through those long centuries that women should not be participants mm-hmm. in public life, and they should not be, have a presence in mosque. Mm-hmm. That became the long tradition. Mm-hmm. And so that is the tradition has been inherited, and that is the tradition that is being overturned, right. That is being changed, right?
Yes.
So you have this legacy that, in a sense, people are fighting against. Now, I must say, though, that it is not the legacy of the Prophet Muhammad. Mm-hmm. So here's the irony. During the time of Prophet Muhammad, women were welcomed in the mosque. Women right. were participants in yeah. the mission of Islam. So the argument of people that want to open up the mosque to women, to empower women, is not an argument we need to be like America or whatever, but no, we need to be like the Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah.
We need to go back to the real Islam,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So mosques in the Muslim world have little space for women, and women are not kind of part of the congregation in a sense. So that's changing, and so we have, recorded good progress in mm-hmm. these aspects.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
particular, women sitting on the mosque boards, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, that I noticed that. I noticed the that's becoming something that is in a lot of mosques. Yeah.
Right. So, for instance, in 2000, we did about one third did not even allow women.
Right.
On the board,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And now that's down to about 7%. So
yeah.
to me, it's clear that the argument that women should not be part of the decision-making of mosques no longer exists. That argument has been won mm-hmm. for the most part. And we need to see in a steady increase of women sitting on mm-hmm. mosques. Board.
Yeah.
So there is good progress. The other aspect is the division of women from the prayer area, the main mm-hmm. prayer area, where they are completely secluded. And again, that is what has been inherited. That is the situation of the vast majority of mosques overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not changed much.
Yeah.
So that is, in a sense, one of the main contentions in mm-hmm. mosques today. And but I expect to see, change along those lines, especially as the second generation. The Muslims sure. of America are still largely first-generation immigrants.
Right, yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Of course, there's a very sizable African-American and white American and Hispanic-American convert community, a significant percentage of the American Muslim community. But for the most part, they're first generation. And so the second generation, those Muslims who have been raised here, especially among the young women, are... kind of on the front lines of trying to change this reality in mosques where women are secluded.
Are there mm-hmm. areas of this second report that we need to look at specifically along lines of age groups or national origin?
Well, as a first generation, a largely first generation community, the American Muslim community is very young. So back in 2000 when we started, I don't know if I recorded any senior program.
Hmm.
Even in 2010, there are just a few. So in 2020, we recorded that 15% of mosques now have a senior program. And so this is the first blip mm-hmm. on the screen of a recognition that there are a growing number of seniors in the American Muslim community. So that's a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the big headline from the first report, or one of the headlines, was that, you know, we have a healthy participation of young adults.
Yes.
And, but that's the biggest challenge as the American Muslim community moves forward, is maintaining the participation of the young adults, because mm-hmm. there is significant grumbling among young adults.
Ihsan, what do you want everybody who listens to you today to know from this report? If they don't remember anything else that we've talked about, what do you want to be sure they remember?
The main thing is that mosques in America want to be neighbors to their community. Mm-hmm. They want to be contributors to the common good in their communities. They are not people who want to isolate. They are not haters. They are not trying to subvert America. And by the way, the first report showed that a significant number of mosques find resistance when they have to go to zoning boards for expansion or new buildings, and that percentage is growing. So, but the reality is just the opposite, that Muslims are not trying to be some type of fifth column a wart on the skin of the community. No, they want to be a positive force in their community.
Dr. Ihsan Bagby is primary investigator for the American Mosque Survey 2020 from the Institute for Social Policy and Understanding. You can take a look at all of these findings at www.ispu.org, and we'll link to it from stateofbelief.com. Ihsan, thank you for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thanks so much, Reverend Gaddy, and God bless to you and all your listeners.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See, he was. He was. Mm-hmm.